Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome into 11 Personnel, Nick Roush and Adam Luckett, here to talk some Kentucky football at the conclusion of the 2020 regular season. Luckett, we weren't sure if we were ever going to get one of these. Feels like just yesterday I was losing my mind over the SEC schedule release announcement. And don't look now, but Kentucky's played 10 football games and has called it a year.
I don't know about everyone else, but the COVID year has kind of moved fast for me. Because I guess there's not the usual checkpoints of a normal calendar where it's like, oh, this point, now I have this many days until this happens, or we've got this or that. It's just been, I don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to get here. So,
yeah, it's
time just kind of goes by a little faster, I guess. But well, that's just my, from where I sit.
I actually read something that it was something to the effect of, like, people who, like psychologists and people who study memory, were not going to remember much from this year because there wasn't anything as eventful. And I think it's flown by because we just get kind of ground into the daily routine of things. And then you just look up and you're like, oh God, it's Saturday, you know? So on one hand, it's kind of flown by and that's a good thing. But on the other hand, it's like, you know, at least Kentucky, they're wrapping up the season and there's still more games to go. It's going to be bizarre having Army-Navy this Saturday and there's like, it's pretty much a full slate.
Well, like just having regular, like Kentucky plays Notre Dame at noon in basketball. And it's just going to, it's going to be in the middle of a college football Saturday. So that in itself is going to be weird.
Can I just say that I volunteered to attend that game and what an idiot. Like, God.
Yeah, it's
for like every reason, but you know,
yeah,
I got the YouTube TV app. I can watch some football games while the basketball game's going on. Well, you didn't hear me say that. Nobody heard me say that. I'm not going to be not doing my job while I'm at Rep Arena. I'm going to be doing my job. Back to the football game. Kentucky played South Carolina Saturday, and it was Senior Day. Adam Luckett, and Kentucky scored 41 points against the South Carolina defense. It had 16 players. And I think if they really wanted to, they could have hung like a 60 burger on them. That South Carolina defense.
Yeah.
I mean, Jamie Robinson and not a whole lot left to it.
Jamie Robinson and the JV team. Or Jamie Robinson and the JV team for sure. The thing with that game was it was pretty obvious they were trying to get Terry Wilson and AJ Rose some numbers, at least from where I was sitting, because they were throwing it a lot. Three possessions in the second half, Chris Rodriguez mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, seen that before.
And you're wondering where he's at. And then he shows back up when it kind of got a little tight, where you kind of needed a couple first downs, and just rips off a 79-yard touchdown. So offensively, it was a weird year because when they played some bad teams, they really lit some people up offensively.
Right.
But when they played anybody with a pulse defensively, they just couldn't do anything all season. It was just the weirdest year in that regard.
The one I knew that they were going to shoot for the Rose number pretty early. Like I knew that before the game. I knew that going into the game. They were going to try to get him to pass Mark Logan to be 10th on the all-time rushing list in school history. He did that pretty easily, and hell, if one was a handoff instead of a pitch pass, he would have got there a lot quicker. But AJ actually played just a good game overall.
His last month of the season, he was really good. It was probably the best ball he played his whole career.
Which, last year, like his best game probably of the whole year was Belk Bowl, and Rose doesn't strike me as a gets better as the season goes along type of back. But that was the case for him. So happy to see him have a real solid game to go out on high note.
Yeah, just all the seniors in general to win like that is good. And I like how that game was a little testy early in the ball game. I like this South Carolina Kentucky rivalry that's kind of going on right now. I like that Kentucky doesn't like them. I like that South Carolina doesn't like them. It'll be interesting to see how it rolls on now with Shane Beamer calling the shots and Muschamp moving on. But I like that. I think that this game is always a little chippy, this game. Every year there's a little extra shoves going on after the whistle. And you saw that early in the game, that the two teams going at it a little bit.
And the thing was, like, if I was on the South Carolina side, that's all. I would just be out there to fight people. Like, I mean, you're not going to win the game. So, you know, you might as well just, like, beat some people up. So, I'm totally with it. I don't blame them one bit. And I love that Austin Dotson, like, you got Belfry getting in the middle of it all. Like, he was in the middle of every single bit of it. And Freddie said it on the radio show on Monday. The time he got flagged, it was probably the least sportsmanlike, or the least unsportsmanlike he was after all of his extracurricular.
Yeah, that one wasn't even that bad. It was just kind of, not saying he did it on accident, but it was just a slight little jab. But he mixes it up. He could play for my team any day, any sport,
yeah,
whatever.
Holy crap! All right, so is Justin Tucker hurt or is he out? Is there something wrong?
He might be in COVID.
Well, I think, is he number 9 for the Ravens?
Yeah.
He just missed a chip shot.
Well, there you go.
This is, so first off, we're Tuesday night football, shocking enough as is. But Tucker, he makes a field goal, then they get like a false start. They move him back 5 yards and he hooks it. Wow, that's weird. That is so shocking. Also shocking that my Pittsburgh Steelers finally lost the football game to the Washington football team. Of all people. But
I was watching that game yesterday, and the football team, they have some dudes on defense now.
Man, Chase Young does not look like a rookie.
Chase Young, Montez Sweat, who got that batted ball in the interception.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Allen, who used to wreck dudes at Alabama. Man,
yeah.
John Bostic, who about tore off Teddy Bridgewater's helmet or head in the Sugar Bowl.
He did tear off his helmet.
Yeah, about tore off his head. Did tear off his helmet. They have some dudes on defense.
Right. They do. And it was not a good look for our guy, Benny Snell. Not a great game.
I didn't see that live, but I saw the replay of that.
And I only saw the fourth down one where Eric Ebron wanted no part of chipping Chase Young, and he just went clean and tackled him before he could even get to the line of scrimmage. So some of it was those guys just being nasty and giving him nowhere to go. And like one play, the center – like snapped it off of his leg, and Benny just had to pick it up and run, or else it was a fumble. So, but I don't know. I think the Steelers.
Well, if Benny's gonna get paid, he's gotta. That's what he has to do. He's gotta be able to score down there.
Yeah, it was unfortunate because that's why they drafted him, and he didn't get it in. And hell, if he gets in just that once, they had another fourth down near the red zone that they couldn't convert. If they could just get one of those two, they win that football game. But I'm going with the spin zone. They needed to lose one anyway. And apparently for tiebreaker sakes, I think the Chiefs only lost was to an NFC team. So it's good that they lost to an NFC team. So I'm just that's how we're going
to. Chiefs lost to the Raiders at home.
They're
AFC division.
Even worse. So Steelers still got the one seed. Boom. Boom goes the dynamite. But back to Kentucky, South Carolina. Justin Rigg was another senior, career high receiving yards. I just like the anytime a tight end catches a long pass, it's noteworthy. And there were three, like every one of his.
Well, probably would have been more if Upshaw doesn't get hurt first series. He hurt his groin early, and we didn't see him after, I don't think, the first series. And then Rigg, he had really two catches on that one scoring drive. Back to back, I think. But it were like two catches for 50 something yards. So, yeah, he had some good moments. Terry had some good moments throwing the football. Overall, I mean, it's good performance. Defensively, that was probably the worst run defense looked all year.
Kevin Harris pushed is pretty around good.
A little bit. Is good. But not that. I don't think he's that good. Like, he's good, but they made him look a little bit like Nick Chubb on Saturday. some of those runs he got, some of those now, long runs.
I wonder how much of that too was like, let's just kind of get out of here kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, still inexcusable. But I mean, really the most inexcusable of all things. I don't know what was more like, oh my God, are you kidding me? They get the ball back right before halftime at like the 30 and can't score a touchdown, or the fake punt in the fourth quarter. I don't know which one was more like, come on, just can you what, really? Yeah,
the first one,
we're still doing this.
It's harder to, obviously the field's condensed, so it can make things a little more difficult. And Terry missed a couple throws, I think. I'm trying to remember. He missed, well, I think the first play, he missed somebody who was open.
Yeah.
Or no, it was a penalty. They had Daly down to the two, I think, and then they got called back.
Well, Kentucky committed a penalty, and then Daly, that was the best ball and the best look they had, and the dude just tackled Allen Daly. There was one where Epps could have made a contested catch, and it just, like, went right through his arms. And then the other two were just off target. So, no, I don't know.
That's the stuff we've talked about with the passing game.
Yeah, just it's
nonstop.
You knew that it wasn't going to end well. Like, I was like, yeah, they're not scoring a touchdown here. They should, but they're not going to. Like, we know the story. It's been written before.
And then on the special teams, I've been of the belief most of the season, like, some of that stuff is a little overhyped. Like, anytime there's one mistake, if there's not a special teams coach, people are just going to blame it on that. Like, when Florida fakes that punt at their own 25 or whatever,
yeah,
on third, I mean, on fourth and eight, like, that's just a great call.
Nobody saw that coming, like, at all.
You have punt left and your All-American punter punts it to the right. Like, that can happen. But, like, that one down there, that was one that was bad. And there's just been other moments. Kickoff return's been bad. Trad Tisdale dropped a ball early in the game
where Kentucky
had to start at like their own 9-yard line. And then they had that little pooch kicker something at the end, and there was a fumble. Kentucky barely recovered that.
Ali like pointed for somebody else to go get it and didn't like jump on it.
And then you've had the whole issue with punt returns all year, not fair catching the ball. So I think there's definitely a reason for people to get upset and demand a special teams coach. I don't think it's maybe as bad as some do, but I think there's definitely a need for that.
Well,
the kicking game was still – like, Matt Ruffalo hit 9 of 11 field goals this year.
Yeah, and I don't think he missed one in, like, 6 games or something. Maybe he missed a long one against Alabama, I think.
Yeah. No one's really talking about that, but, like, he had a really good year.
Yeah, it was just the one time you can't miss, he missed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an overtime extra point. But otherwise, he had a great year. Duffy got left off of the Ray Guy Award list, even though – did you see where they had a kicker from Indiana ranked like 46 in punting average? I know that the numbers are so off this year because like the guy who's the top ranked punter nationally has only kicked in like 3 games. So mm-hmm. like you don't have an even sample size, but still to have the Indiana punter, like what's he done? You know,
I wonder what his net punting average is. That might have something to do with it.
Yeah. And that college football stats.
Looking it up right now. And it's not the best
stuff.
Duffy was Kentucky's 20th in net punting average. That Florida return really killed him. Indiana's 30th. So yeah, he probably shouldn't be on there.
I don't understand that at all. But hey, big year for Indiana. Everybody's gonna hype him up. And it doesn't take away from the season Max had last year. In hell, he hit some great dingers last Saturday too.
The first half of the season he was really good. I think the latter half wasn't his best, and then he got ruled out for COVID too.
Right. So
he had a weird year, along with the rest of the team.
Yeah, that's in a nutshell right there. Yeah, it was a weird year, but hell, it made it through, and now we're a week away from signing day, Luckett, and I feel like it's kind of creeping up and it's going to bite me in the ass. So I need to get on the grindstone. But the good news, knock on wood, up to this point, you've seen a lot of decommitments elsewhere, especially where there's been some volatility in the coaching ranks. You haven't seen that thus far. Now, it's only been 2 days since they decided to flip coaches, but Armand Scott only decommitment as of late. The next week is going to be a blitz to get all the stuff Wednesday. You need to know about this upcoming recruiting class.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, like, from where we stand right now, looks like Kentucky's in a pretty good spot.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll see, but
things can change rapidly.
the one everyone's watching for is Christian Lewis, obviously. And it's starting to look like Lane Kiffin's going to load up on receivers, and Ole Miss was the one to watch for there. He's about to flip a Florida State commit, or he's already decommitted, but he's about to commit to Ole Miss. It's a four-star kid that goes to IMG. There was another Mississippi State commit that just decommitted. They think he's going to end up at Ole Miss.
Ooh,
so that they kind of got all their all their receivers right now. So that's a good one. And then the last school there really is Texas A&M. And I don't know too much about their recruiting class, but I mean, we'll see if they maybe put some late pressure on them. But as of right now, I think they feel good. Now, Jimbo Fisher is a notorious late closer to come in late on some kids and really step on the gas and steal some for people. So that's something to keep an eye on. But I think you feel good from that end. And then I think without the visits, you know, usually kids be taking last minute visits right about now.
Right.
So we would know more. Unfortunately, there's no way to keep track of virtual visits and Zoom conversations.
Yeah, we can't.
So like, we're not sure who's talking to who or whatnot. Yeah.
Right. But there's certainly a lot of those happening right now. I have heard from, you know, there might be some good news coming too. You know. Just saying. Might be some good news coming Kentucky's way.
There might be a replacement for Armand Scott coming.
Mm-hmm.
But and we'll see if there's another surprise. But we heard Vince Merrill talk this week on the coach's show about transfers. I believe he said that they're going after a couple of transfers. I think that's something to monitor
mm-hmm.
with the size of this class. I think they're at 17 commits right now.
They can add like six if they really wanted to.
Yeah.
They can add a mm-hmm. lot.
So that's something to just keep in mind. And I think getting the offensive coordinator is going to they want to leave some wiggle room for whoever that's going to be to add maybe a late player or two on the offensive side of the football. So that's another thing to keep in mind with this class. So Kentucky could be more active this year in the second signing period than they were last year.
Yeah, it's exciting, especially because it feels like there's a lot up in the air right now. That's what's going to make the show fun. There's a lot up in the air right now. So let's not dilly-dally anymore. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of this. We got a coaching search, man. For the first time, we're doing a little 11 personnel coaching search. It's not head coaching search. I think, thankfully, that probably wouldn't be a good thing. But it is. Mark Stoops made it official Sunday afternoon that they're moving on from Grain and Henshaw after five seasons. And look, I know we talked about it at length last week. We kind of saw this coming. I don't think none of us were surprised, but I will ask you something that some people have asked me, and I don't have a good answer for this. The passing numbers have been what they've been. Never above 97th under Grain and Henshaw. It hasn't worked. But when do you think Stoops knew that there was a change was going to come?
It's a good question. I think the Missouri game, he knew it. He had to change something. Maybe not necessarily Eddie Grand, but that something had to change on that side of the ball to go out against Missouri and to play the way they did on offense. You know, 30 some plays in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think that was a moment. And then you go out, you get blanketed against Georgia. And then something went on there behind the scenes with the Terry Wilson, Joey Gatewood flip.
Right.
And then you come out.
Oh, I just hugged him and loved him and all that kind of thing.
So Terry plays well against Vanderbilt. But then he goes to Alabama and Florida, and it was pretty much the same thing we saw earlier in the season. So I think there's probably something to the fact that we need Terry, like the offense saying we can only do it with Terry, and then it's the same stuff you're getting.
Right, right.
So there might have been like a lack of flexibility type there was just kind of the icing on the cake. But overall, I think the more important part is that they – like I brought that stat up earlier where they scored 15 points or less in like 38% of their SEC games.
So that won't win you many games in the SEC.
It's just not leaving your defense much wiggle room. And it's not winning football, to put it bluntly. And the offenses are only getting better, college football in general. So you can't win games 17-14 anymore. You got to be able to get the 30 points on a regular occasion. Kentucky just hasn't been able to do that. And to do that, you have to create explosive plays. The easiest way to create explosive plays is in the pass game. So Kentucky is way behind the eight ball because of their passing offense, because they haven't really been able to get it up off the ground, and they haven't been able to stretch the field vertically. So it's made them easier to defend. And when you play teams that have bad run defenses, yeah, you can put up big numbers. But in the SEC, usually most of these good defenses are stopping the run. And you're not going to beat teams when you can't pass the ball. Like the Texas A&M game in 2018 is a perfect example of that. Kentucky has a really good team, has a chance to do really good things that year. You can make the case that they had a better team than Texas A&M. But the bottom line in that game was one thing Texas A&M did really well was stop the run. And they weren't going to let Kentucky run down their throat. They stopped the run, and Kentucky just needed to complete some passes to win the game, just a few to win the game, and they just couldn't do it. And so it's that with – I mean, there's a bunch more examples of that. But I think that's really the bottom line, that he knew – like, they've established that winning culture. Eddie Grant, if it wasn't for Eddie Grant, would be a defense coordinator more than likely. Like, he saved his job. That the hire of Graham was a great hire. It helped establish them going a direction they wanted to go. But after this run – things just aren't working. And in the Stoops press conference, I thought was very interesting. I had a couple comments, but one specifically was he pretty much admitted that the Lynn Bowden experiment hurt them more than it helped them, and mainly I think in recruiting.
That was the first time he admitted that. They kind of alluded to it at different points, but I don't think they really knew, like, the development that those guys missed from that year was just substantial and significant. And even though you're like, it was a ton of fun, it just,
well, that on top of missing the spring too.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was a factor in all this too, was not having spring ball last year for the most part.
Yeah. So, you know, he admitted that. He also, the thing that I liked like it is that you can tell he's really sick and tired of the whole Stoops handcuffs his offense. He doesn't want an offense that scores points. Cause like just the notion behind it, like people got really hung up on what he said in that 2018 season. Like when people were wanting to pass the ball more, when Benny Snell football worked pretty well. And he's like, well, I mean, what do you want me to do? Yeah. You know, like this is not a bad thing right now. And also, it helps our defense. That's how football works. People got really hung up on that. And it turned into Stoops doesn't want to throw the football.
Yeah.
And
well, I think there was definitely some when Neil Brown was here, there was definitely some headbutting, I think, between them, those two, about what was kind of the right way to do things and what wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where it started. And Stoops being a young head coach, learning how to do it. And then the reason I think that's the thing is Shannon Dawson came out and said, I don't run Wildcat. That's not what we're doing. And then 3 weeks later, they're running Wildcat because the head coach wanted them to do it. So, I mean, I understand where that comes from. But with Grant, I don't think that was there. I think there was a really good trust level between those two.
Because those guys knew each other well.
Another thing to keep to remember with all this, in 2016, Mark Stoops had to totally take over the defense. Totally take over. In 2017, 2017, he had a brand new defensive coordinator. He only worked with 1 year, he had to make sure he was doing, you know, what he wanted to do on that side of the ball. 2018, he's breaking in another brand new, or 2019, breaking in another brand new defensive coordinator who never called plays before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's definitely something too, like that he's really focused on the defense and what they're doing and whatnot. And there was a trust level with Grant, and he just let them, you know, he trusted them and they ran the show. But I just think at the end of the day, he wants to pass the ball. I think the air raid kind of experiment honestly didn't work. But he knows he has to throw the ball. I think if Stoops was really holding the offense and his offensive coaches under his thumb, Kentucky would be running Wildcat a lot this year. I also think if he was really holding them under his thumb, Chris Rodriguez would have had a lot more carries than
25 carries a game.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, exactly.
And I apologize if y'all hear some noise in the background.
I think
HVAC thing.
And getting to that recruiting factor, I think that's why you saw them come out and try to throw it against Missouri.
Yeah.
While they threw it 37 times against Auburn.
Right.
They were trying to prove they could pass the ball to quiet all that noise.
Especially the Jordan Watkins thing happened. Yeah,
the problem was they just couldn't get it done this year, and it made everything look worse.
Well, not only have they started to put that emphasis in recruiting, but I mean, I'm not going to publish it every time that they talk about it on KSR, because I mean, he got asked about it almost once a week towards the end of the season. But the amount of times he talked about just the overall trajectory and needing to pass it more, that's been happening for a year. So I'm not buying it. I am buying that they are going to get that. That's obviously going to be a focus of this offensive coordinator hire. And Luckett, we talked about it last week, how there's not an obvious choice. And we've thrown a lot of names out there on KentuckySportsRadio.com. And I think between what we've heard, what we know he knows, and what he shared with us in the press conference, I think we can get a general idea of how things are working, but I still can't tell exactly which direction he's leaning, because he said, you know what? We don't need a guy doesn't need to know me before, but I need to know what he's going to do. He's, you know, I've got the full financial backing of the university. But you know, you said cast a wide net. I know he didn't say that, but I think he said all options are on the table or something like that. So you're going to see, I think, some different names pop up here and there that are more favorites than other. One that you pulled out, I really liked. Pep Hamilton. He was the OC. Brad White was in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. He worked with Andrew Luck previously. It's kind of how he got the gig, because he was Andrew Luck's offensive coordinator at Stanford. And then goes to the Colts when Luck's there. And he was an XFL coach. I'm trying to think of a few other gigs he had as well off the top of my head. I guess he worked with Harbaugh in Michigan for a year or two.
Yeah, he was – the Michigan had that weird thing where Harbaugh wouldn't say he was the offensive coordinator who was calling plays. He called it like a think tank kind of thing. So you didn't really know – was he calling plays? Was he not? That's not something we knew what he was doing. But yeah, he's been a lot of time in the NFL. He was just a DC Defenders head coach. I believe they had one of the better offenses in the XFL for that short time.
Yeah, I think Josh Johnson maybe was their quarterback. Or no. It was Cardale Jones.
Yeah, and then they replaced him with.
With the guy who's at Carolina now, who's Bridgewater's backup, I think.
No, I think he played for someone else. The guy that just PJ Walker.
Yeah,
he just played well in the game he got in for Bridgewater a couple weeks ago.
You're right. He was with the Houston team. Like the Roughnecks or something.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds right. Man, it's sad that I know XFL quarterbacks as well. Nevertheless, a big reason why I like Pep too. Having a guy like Pep as your coordinator and offense coach, like, Pep knows what the hell he's doing. And also, mm-hmm. Pep's a great guy to just curse at whenever you're mad. Ah, oh, you stinking Pep. Come on. Like, Pep's just a great name for a football guy.
The only thing I would say about Hamilton is when you look at that Michigan and Stanford kind of experiment, the Michigan thing was they were not good on offense. Like, it was bad. Not at all. So
when now they like, were at Stanford, football was a little different back then.
Right.
But the reason why I think he would at least be considered if, you know, he wanted the job is because Stoops is big thing. You know, he's like, we're not doing the Mississippi State thing. Well, he didn't call him out by name. And he's like, you see in this league, you go from one mm-hmm. extreme to the other. It doesn't work.
Well, I think the NFL thing, the main reason I think you do that is you want to get play action pass game mixed in with what you're doing right now, which is running the ball at a pretty good clip. And if you figure out a way to get that involved, that could cure a lot of ills, just being able to hit teams with some play action stuff. So obviously I think that's still allure there. It's just what kind of branch are you going to go off of? And I think a big part in this is Greg Minuski, the quality control guy
mm-hmm.
right now, who was in the NFL for a long time. It's tight with Brad White. We've heard Stoops talk about him a couple times. I mean, that's a guy I could see Stoops maybe leaning on a little bit in this coaching search because of some of his connections in the NFL, if that's a route they want to go.
Right. He was around 20 some odd years at a bunch of different stops. And so he's worked with a lot of people. And I think Stoops, kind of how Gran was, you know, an older guy he could bounce ideas off of. I think he really likes having Minuski around because not only for that part, but also he's a defensive guy. And let's be real, like those defensive guys, they stick together. You know, it's just so
yeah. Role. There's a role called chief of staff that's starting to become popular around the college football world. And basically, it's you're pretty much your head coach's kind of right hand man. Like, mm-hmm. Dan Mullen hired Paul Pasqualoni, who was Syracuse, UConn head coach. He's in the NFL for a long time. That's what he does. He's kind of, I guess he's kind of just, you know, a guy that a head coach can lean on for game plan or whatever, just whatever.
Yeah.
I would be surprised. What I'm getting at is I would be surprised if Minuski gets that title because it's a way to give him maybe a pretty sizable pay bump and more kind of coaching duties.
Brez has had it for the longest time.
He
was the first one to get it. I could see them shifting him or something like that. They deal with a lot of recruiting stuff and what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, everyone's different. You can use it in different ways. There's not really a one specific set of tasks you need to complete. I think everybody would be different of that. Well, it's just something I thought he could potentially do.
And I think another one, too, is they keep tabs on what people are saying. Like, Stoops ain't got time to read what's on, mm-hmm. you know, KSR or House of Blue. But, you know, the chief of staff can have their pulse on what people are saying. And that could influence who they ultimately decide to go to in this hire to an extent. A couple other names, like, I love that. There's a couple of let me just pull up the list here. There was one that John Clay threw out, Eric Kafka from the Chiefs.
Matt Kafka.
Yeah, which would be great if you could get the Chiefs quarterback coach, but that dude's going to end up placing Eric Bieniemy whenever, mm-hmm. like how that guy doesn't have a job yet.
The one thing to watch for there is if Doug Peterson is going to get fired, the Eagles head coach.
Which,
if Andy Reid, because I believe he worked for Reid before, if Reid just brought him back down there to be his.
Oh, it is a good point.
Quarterback's coach.
Yeah.
Offense coordinator. That's something to watch because I don't know how highly he thinks of Kafka or whatnot, but just something to keep in the vault.
Well, and as you'll, when we go through some of these names, like a lot of the snowballing, it really is a game of dominoes.
Yeah.
Where
Matt Nagy's another one Andy Reid could bring back because he's probably going to get fired from the Bears too. And I believe he came off the Reid tree as well.
Yeah. And like Press Taylor, who that is such a country club name, Press Taylor.
Sounds like a Texas quarterback.
Yeah. He's Zach Taylor's younger brother who is only 32 years old. He's got that young, good-looking, like he has all of the look of a guy who's going to be big in the coaching ranks soon, and he might want to hop out of the Philadelphia train. Carson Wentz just got benched. The time might be right to get the hell out of there.
That's true. You know where Press Taylor is from?
Tulsa.
No, well, he went to high school.
Norman,
Oklahoma.
Yes.
At about the time when Bob Stoops would have been really rolling.
Yeah. Didn't go to Oklahoma, though.
No, he went to community college. I think that's what his brother did. His brother transferred from somewhere, then ended up in Nebraska, and then Press ended up at Tulsa. Marshall. He had recruiting interest from Louisville, apparently.
He was a GA at Tulsa. That's why I've got Tulsa.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's stuck on my head. Jed Fish, who I mean, that sounds like a guy that, like, oh, good old Jed down there at the watering hole.
If you if you follow coaching search at all, you've seen Jed Fish's name 100 times. And the main reason why is Bruce Feldman has plugged him for about 78 jobs in the last 3 seasons. I think Bruce and Jed get together and drink some beers in the off season.
Bruce anyway, and Jed, just there is a Bruce and a Jed drinking beers as we speak somewhere in America.
Oh, I guarantee it.
There's a Bruce and Jed somewhere enjoying a cold one.
Well, Jed Fish had an interesting career because he didn't play ball in college. He went to Florida, didn't play or anything. He would write Spurrier, like, while he was in high school, and was like, I want to come tutor under you or something, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, he just showed up one day, and Spurrier was like, you're the kid that's been writing me this whole time? And he let him be, like, I don't know, a manager or something. And then he worked under Florida or under Spurrier while he was there, and then it's kind of been everywhere. Most recently was UCLA's offensive coordinator. The last year they had Rosen when he had a pretty good season. And he worked with Harbaugh too.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was in the think tank.
You're right. He was in the think tank. But he was there when their offense was actually good that first two Harbaugh seasons. And then he left, and that's when things really started to get ugly. But he's a guy that I could see working out because Sean McVay worked with Greg Minuski for the Redskins.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean McVay went from there to be the Rams head coach. And since he's been there, he's kind of been the golden boy in the NFL. If you know Sean McVay, you might get a head coaching job. Zach Taylor was the quarterback's coach, got the Bengals head coaching job simply mm-hmm. because he worked for Sean McVay.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury was friends with Sean McVay, and that helped him get the Arizona Cardinals job. So there's definitely
Matt LaFleur was a McVay guy who, right?
Yeah, Matt LaFleur was a
Packers. McVay guy. So it's everywhere. If you're a McVay guy, you're doing well. And one of those name that's come up, Shane Waldron, I think I'm saying that right. Yes. He's been the quarterback's coach there for 4 years now.
Promoted the pass game coordinator here recently.
Right. So that's a name of interest. A name to keep an eye on, but I think the one thing you noted, like, it since you are unfortunately a Bengals fan, you noted that he did interview for that head coaching vacancy when it came up, and Taylor got it. So maybe,
and there's a speculation that he was one of Orgeron's candidates to replace Joe Brady,
right? So, like, if getting that guy might be too big of an ask. Like, he's mm-hmm. he's highly sought after, so he can kind of wait out his jobs. But you know, if you're able to convince a McVay guy, I mean, to come to UK, you want an offense that's exciting and sells tickets. Getting a guy from the McVay coaching tree would certainly do that.
And here's the thing about these NFL guys: a trend starting to develop. I think the main reason for this is NFL. Cup of tea right now is to hire, like, this young cutting edge offensive minds, and all those guys come in the head coaching chair and they're calling plays. So what that does, that takes away jobs in the NFL for some of these other guys. So it's harder to break in to be a play caller. Either you have to be a head coach or you got to join up with a defensive head coach, which not many of those guys are being hired right now. And so for these guys to kind of break in, they're going to have to move to college. To kind of break that seal, I think. And so maybe that's an avenue Kentucky experiments with. Washington, Boston College, California all made OC hires last year, and they all hired NFL staffers. So maybe that's a trend we're about to see, and maybe Kentucky's going to jump on it. But I think that's an important thing to remember, is that I think there's a void there for some of these coaches, where coming to college could make sense for a lot of them, because it allow them to get some play calling experience.
Man, I was just trying to think of who even is a defensive coach, head coach right now in the NFL.
Mike Tomlin.
I was going to say Tomlin.
Best one. Belichick. Yeah. There's some out there, but you got the recent hires. You just go through the last couple of years, and it's not very many. Vic Fangio is the only one I can really think of.
It's funny because it's like the inverse of head coaching hires, where they're hiring guys from college now. Even Matt Rhule.
That's another thing. I think that's about to start happening. I think we're going to see some college head coaches get plucked.
And they're culture guys. You know, they're like, we want to change the culture to this. This is the buzzword right now, which, don't get me wrong, it's important. I don't know how exactly tangible it is to measure culture or whatever, or how good you are at doing that. But you know what? Give Matt Rhule and the Panthers credit. Like, they've been better than expected in year one with absolutely nobody except for Christian McCaffrey, and he's been hurt for half the year.
They've been competitive pretty much every week.
Yeah, they're not out of the games. Even when they got PJ Walker, they got an XFL quarterback in there, and they're still doing work. So it's kind of funny to see how the tables have turned. There's one name that's technically in the NFL ranks that I just don't want to see, and that's Matt Canada. First off, just cue the blame Canada gifts. Like, don't want to deal with that. And the Ed Orgeron, I feel like his hires are either striking gold or diarrhea. Like, there's no in between. It's like good, bad. I mean, I thought he was going to commit a murder on the sidelines this weekend of Bo Pelini. Like, Bo Pelini, it has taken years off of Coach O's life. And I think Canada, while it wasn't as bad, there was a lot of friction there. A lot of friction there.
Kentucky hosts LSU next year. How about you hire Canada, bring on Pelini as a QC, and then you just got those dudes scheming all offseason to beat that guy. Just the Super Bowl was when Kentucky hosts LSU.
God.
You get those two guys with that, Kentucky's beating LSU. You just write it up right then. But, yeah, more than Canada, his scheme, I like his scheme. He's just, by all accounts, he's a hard guy to deal with. Like, not really the easiest guy to work with. Why you've seen him bounce around so many places. But I think his scheme would be something that Stoops would like. But I don't know if that's going to. It's going to fly. And I also think he wants to be a head coach. Like, I think that's probably his next move, either stay in the NFL or get a MAC job, like a head coach at a MAC school or something like that. I don't think he's wanting to jump in and take orders from somebody anymore.
Well, if there's one thing I know about Mark Stoops, he's not stubborn or bullheaded in the slightest. So that would work out great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you took the sarcasm. I wondered how many people would actually think I was serious when I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe Kentucky basketball dropped out of the top 25. Didn't see that coming. There were some people out there like it who didn't get the – couldn't take the hint.
Speaking of top 25s, Missouri made the playoff top 25 this week.
Don't stop. Don't make me say nice things about Eli Drinkwitz.
Man, I'm just thinking about this year since the season has been over. And really, it came down to four games. You had, knowing what we know now, that Mississippi State, South Carolina, Vanderbilt were all pretty bad. Kentucky wins. Okay, you'll win those three.
Right.
Georgia, Florida, Alabama are all in the top 10. Okay, you're probably going to lose all three of those.
We thought Mississippi State and Missouri would be flipped.
Yeah, but I also thought Mississippi State would be bad. Maybe not as bad as they've been, but I thought Missouri would be down there when really they haven't been.
Yeah, because they had a quarterback, Bazelak, pretty damn good.
And so, anyway, you had the four games in the middle. Like, you had really – the schedule was in three tiers. You had the tier three, Kentucky beat all of them. Tier one, Kentucky lost to all of them, wasn't close in any of the games. And then tier two, you really had four close games, and Kentucky went 1-3 in those games. And in all four of those games, Kentucky was in it in the fourth quarter and found a way to lose Ole Miss, Missouri, and Auburn. And that really stinks. Because that's just, if you win one more of those, I think the season's a little bit different. You win two more, and Kentucky's probably not going through a coordinator change.
No, you're right about that. Because winning does cure most all ills. And I was just looking at the SEC standings, and there really is a haves and have nots, and Kentucky's right smack dab in the middle of them. And things go just a little bit differently in a game or two, and you're kind of in there with the haves instead of just like, I think Kentucky might even be the only four win SEC team. There's zero wins, one wins, two wins, one win, five wins, seven, eight. But I think that Kentucky might be the only four-win team right now. So it's kind of a mess. Kind of a mess in the middle of there. Now,
yeah, it just football. That's how it breaks sometimes. And we just thought this year that with an experienced team, senior quarterback, they would fare well in those close games. And the fact of the matter was they didn't. They couldn't hit it right in those situations. And that's why that's really the reason you got to that 4-6 record, I think. It's just – Those games are in the middle where you need to win. They just went the wrong way this year.
The experience didn't pay off like you thought, and the passing game didn't take the steps that we thought it would make. I mean, I don't think any of us expected them to be world beaters, but better, like at least average, and they were far below it. Mm-hmm. Far, far below it. You can't be in the likes of the military academies.
I got a question for you, Nick. This time next week, where will we be in the offensive coordinator search? We'll be at the signing day eve, or I guess we're recording on signing day.
Yeah, we're gonna wait until after it's signed, sealed, and delivered. So,
okay. when we get on there next week, where do you think we'll be in the OC search?
I don't think we'll be any further along than we are right now.
Do you think we'll have a better idea of who the top choices are?
Maybe. I really think it's not something that we're going to find out to the bowl game. And that's just, I mean, some of that is me just imagining like I'm going back to John L. leaving at halftime of the GMAC bowl. But I feel like in a lot of these bowl games, you get like, I remember Pat Narduzzi being up in the booth for a game. Like I just feel like in my mind, I've seen the talking about new coach during bowl game thing a lot. So I'm imagining that happening. And that's really what it's all rooted in, because I do think Stoops is going to have to weed through plenty of folks. And in the meantime, he's also recruiting a ton too. So I think he's, as he said, he doesn't need to have a coordinator by signing day. He's more worried about getting the right guy. And that's exactly what you said a week ago. That's much more important than rushing through this search, because it's a very important hire.
If it's an NFL staffer, their regular season does not end until January 3rd.
And I would think that even if they're in the playoffs or not, they're bare minimum going through regular season.
Yes, I think that's a fair assumption. So if it's going to be an NFL guy, it's probably going to happen that week after – what's it called? Black Monday in the NFL when they fire all the coaches?
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be sometime that week. You're looking like January 5th, 6th, 7th, also if it's an NFL guy.
Know if things would be reported and they would just finish like their last game the week of. That's why I was optimistic about the bowl game, because more than likely you're looking at Liberty Bowl, which is New Year's Eve. So that's what
Thursday.
The Thursday before the NFL Sunday. So like I could see a report coming out like during the game. I don't think it would be like the Shane Beamer report we got, I mean, 5 minutes after the game ended. It was going to be official.
He could not, like, I bet that was, he could not wait to hit send. He was just waiting for that game. And that game like drug on. That was probably the longest game Kentucky played all year.
That fourth quarter really just got, whew.
Imagine being on that South Carolina beat. Like, we wouldn't even – I don't even know if we would have said anything about the game. It would have just been all coaching search.
Oh, and well, it was – they were asking him – they were asking Bobo about
I heard,
it.
Yeah, I went and watched that, and he was like – he looked at the SID and was like, yeah, say, even say
Did he really?
Yeah.
And, like, the reporter's, like, explaining to him what's going on. And, I mean, because Bobo knew the writing was on the wall, but it's also like,
yeah,
what do I even do right now? Which, speaking of,
Bobo gave line. Did you hear that from? He goes. Did you hear that from? You know, Ray Tanner or anybody from South Carolina or just some beat writer? And the guy was like, Bruce Feldman, and he's like, oh, okay. Like, if Bruce Feldman said it, it's probably legit.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now I know you had Bobo on your initial list, on the first KSR hot board. We also threw out a little Lincoln Riley out there, although I think he's ultimately going to – right, he's going to end up being Bobo's replacement at Carolina. And that kind
Garrett of Riley, Lincoln's yeah. brother. Yes, that's what it seems like. We haven't heard any more since Beamer was hired, but that was kind of – I think that was a sell during the coaching search, which we're going to get into this. Pretty much South Carolina let everything loose through their coach. Dude. We know exactly what happened in South Carolina's coaching search. There's not many secrets. Bob Caslin, who's known to maybe pop off at the mouth every once in a while, and Ray Tanner were not hiding stuff from people. And so that sounds like the sell that Garrett Riley and maybe Coastal Carolina's defensive coordinator are going to be the two guys that Beamer targets to bring to Columbia.
Well, all right. So let's just talk about the South Carolina here thing for a second, because it turned Louisville into a mess. Because Scott Satterfield, I mean, is he just naive? I don't know how you could butcher a I'm just going to casually flirt with another school more so than he did, because he did just enough flirting to anger the masses, but then still went and met with them when he wasn't going to get the job, and everybody knew it.
That's what never made sense to me in the entire thing. We all, like, I've been coming on here for 3 weeks or 2 weeks now saying Shane Beamer is going to be South Carolina's head coach. That's not because I've got inside sources in South Carolina. It's just what they were telling people for 2 weeks. I came on here 2 weeks and said, they're just wasting everybody's time. We need to just hire Shane Beamer and get this thing over with. Like, what are we waiting on?
Get the show on the road.
Yeah. So, the sad thing, number one, something's going on there behind. Like, it's not a good fit. Like, he's not comfortable here. Maybe he's worried about the team the next couple years because they lose a lot.
His family obviously hates it here because he's over there. His answer to, well, what's the difference between players being all in and coaches? Well, coaches, you know, they got families they got to think of. Career players, it's just one of them. It's like, oh, they don't have families at all. Like, what? Yeah. This is insane.
Right, right. The in-state recruiting has been awful. The fan base is they bit back at him a little bit this year with some of the results.
He thought he built.
That's what happens when you have a minus 20 turnover margin or whatever they have.
Oh, it's like.
I mean, it's just been sloppy this year. They've lost like 4-1 possession games. So maybe he's just, and this is the thing with Satterfield, though. This was his first time being out of the bubble,
right?
Pretty much, and into like big time football. And like when he did the L's down, we all laughed and joked about it. But that was just weird. Like, why would you make a big deal out of that? You look like such a high school teacher for getting mad at a kid for doing something silly. Like, this is just kind of being in a rivalry. You just look very small time doing something like this. And this is another thing where he's looked small time. And I think a big thing in this, like, if Mark Stoops is in a pressure cooker kind of situation as a head coach, he can call his brother, his other brother, mm-hmm. Jimbo Fisher, and ask for advice. Like, what should I do here? How would you handle this kind of thing with the media? Like, I don't know if Satterfield has that person to bounce things off of, because he's going into these things with not really a plan, and it's showing, and he's sticking his foot in his mouth over and over. And then Louisville's got that weird relationship with their head coaches where
because they've been spurned so many times. Like they've been told by their they did it to themselves hiring Petrino the second time.
They haven't accepted that they're really a stepping stone job, which is not a bad thing. Not a bad place. Because now it doesn't matter. You're in the ACC now. It doesn't matter. Like if somebody wants to leave, like, fine, you'll go hire somebody else. Your job's good enough now where you can go find another coach. But they're still, like you saw on Twitter, they want the football Denny Crum. Well, I'm going to tell you a little secret. Like, football coaches don't hang places very long. Like, if you get 6-7 years out of them and it's, a few bowl games, have a couple 25 finishes.
Eric Crawford just shared all of the columns he wrote for the Courier-Journal over the years of Louisville coaches basically just flirting with other teams or, just all of the will they, won't they leave. And then this is a quote from John L. Smith after leaving.
Louisville. I know what you're talking about.
And the headline of the article is John gives them L in farewell. And his quote is really, I don't think there's any ownership here from the fans. They think that the coach and players are going to put this thing at another level. He basically just said, man, y'all got to accept that y'all suck.
I don't think.
Oh, no, you broke up on me.
He had another quote in there that pretty much said, I don't think our fans understand the college football hierarchy. Like how this kind of stuff works. Like you're going to leave a CUSA job for a Big Ten job, which was what Michigan State was. And like Petrino, it was a conference USA job. Yes, he's going to want an SEC job. When Auburn calls, he's obviously going to want there. So like they're definitely that situation. They're looking for the basketball or the football version of Denny Crum. Like I saw that tweeted out by multiple people this week. And that's just not happening. Like being a stepping stone, you're in a Power Five conference now. You can be a stepping stone. Like embrace it. If you like, this is where good coaches go to go. Yeah. This is where good coaches go to go to the next level. And eventually you'll get a good coach that won't want to leave. That'll just stay.
Well, in fairness for them, even when coaches have had success, and that's why, like, it's a good thing that they're moving on because they've done good things at your program. They never have success at their second stop. Now, granted, like Petrino did at Arkansas for a little while, but that was after the Falcons thing failed. But like Charlie Strong at Texas was getting heckled by boosters from day one.
That was an odd thing from the jump.
For them, they're like, why are you leaving us for that girl when we're better for you anyway? So I get where they're coming from, but and they should be pissed right now. Like the whole Satterfield doing this after one good year, thinking he's built up all this goodwill. Well, you're kind of losing some of it just by sucking this
year.
Well,
he just burned. He's terrible, but basically the same team from that first season.
It's gone.
Now those recruiting misses are going to be magnified,
just like that,
like in the off season and all that type, all that type of stuff. Their schedule next year is brutal. Oh,
man, and it was even weirder. They have his press conference and it fails. So then they have this PR campaign through the kids tweeting out stuff. And so Tutu's tweeting about how much he loves Scott Satterfield. And then, oh yeah, I'm opting out. But wait, I'm not opting out? Like what is going on over there? That is wheels are spinning.
Yeah, you've
man.
Seen kind
wheels
of the media circle the wagons or them trying to get out in the media and people tweet through social media saying how good of a guy he is and so on, so on. But important thing to remember here is his buyout's only $5 million. And that's part of the reason I think he wanted that extension was to beef that up. Yeah.
Beef it up a little bit.
Because that drops down to $3.5 million. I think at the end of January. So he could go in. Well, number one, like he's a loss away in another bad Paris conference from getting fired. Like, I firmly think that's on the table. If you would have talked to me this time yesterday, I would have said he's getting fired on Saturday or on Sunday. Now I've kind of backtracked it a little bit since it seems like the players are defending and whatnot. But, you know, who knows what – if something could – it could be a Moorhead situation type of thing where he goes and says something stupid and then they're just like, we got the money. Let's just make it happen. Let's make a move right now. So I would –
Is there going to be a dog?
I don't know. In the Wakey Leaks come back happen? To haunt him, maybe, finally. You know who hasn't forgot about Wakey Leaks?
Wake Forest.
Dave Clawson has not forgot about Wakey Leaks.
Damn right they ain't forgot about it. No, he has not forgot about it at all. The one thing I really am looking forward to, we mentioned contract extensions and whatnot. I love that the word out of Michigan was that, Harbaugh's not getting fired. He's getting an extension. Well, the quote-unquote extension was, we are redoing your contract to lower your base salary.
Restructuring his contract, right.
Also lower your buyout. Yeah, exactly. So we're making it easier for us to fire you. But we're going to keep you around because we can't really not at this point. And oh, by the way, you are getting out of playing Ohio State because of COVID.
That's
stuff.
Just so assured
everybody's
him
just making fun
a year of next year. Illinois did a similar thing with Lovie Smith, where it would have made it easier for them to fire him if it got bad enough. So that's just saving themselves from having to do that. And not playing Ohio State is going to help just from the optics point of view.
Yeah, I love, too, that this year would have been one of the few times that anybody would have cared about the old Oaken bucket because you wouldn't have had Ohio State, Michigan. And then not only does Purdue
Indiana does, too, problems, it sounds like.
Then Indiana has them, too. So, like, that game's not going to get played. And I know people are like, just go ahead and play Indiana with somebody else. I mean, it's not going to end up working. I guess A&M's looking for a game that they're not
going to get. Is the SEC going to – will they let them? It's my question.
It'd be fun to make it a
playoff that, game that's with the Ohio State. Easy answer. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, look at what we saw from BYU Coastal. Like, that was just awesome. So I don't think we would expect the same. And I think if it's A&M too, like, I mean, playing a prove it game against some teams is one thing, but doing it against Ohio State, like, if you're A&M, you kind of just hope the committee, like, just says, all right, screw you guys. But they still had Ohio State at fourth. So,
yeah,
I don't know what they're thinking.
They're not passing the chance of having a playoff of Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Ohio State. Like, they're just not passing that up.
Yeah.
That's the best they could do.
I don't know all the people. People of, like, blustering one way or the other because you got to have stuff to talk about. But
you want to talk about eyeballs. They'll have lot of eyeballs for that, especially in COVID when everybody's at home.
I'm totally with you on the playoff talk has to just like
it's shut bad
the hell up ESPN.
It's bad.
Like, they're exhausting us, man. Because the thing of that ESPN, they're not good. Like, they try to grasp onto something that's very palatable to everyone. And I don't like somebody who's a real, like, they try to get to all the casual fans. And I hate that. Like, granted, it's because I'm a hardcore fan, but they try to casual fan it with everybody. And you know what? Like, those people don't really pay attention to what the pundits are saying anyway. Like, if they'll watch First Take or something. You don't need this on every second of every minute of College Football Live or whatever your shows are, your sports centers. Like, I'm with you, man. I don't need this playoff talk all the time because the fact of the matter is, when they do these ranking shows, none of it matters until, you know, there's 2 weeks to go now. So I can kind of pay attention to it a little bit. But up until this point, I would have done fine with absolutely zero college football playoff
time. Yeah, I mean, even just in the games, like, through Kentucky's playing, like, you could go back and watch the Kentucky Louisville game last year, a pretty big rivalry game. And I guarantee you 10 minutes of the broadcast is filled with them showing the rankings, talking about who these two C-team announcers on the SEC network would put, who's their top four in the playoff. Like, no one watching that game gives a damn about your top four. Like, stop.
Matt Stinchcomb telling his
– no one cares.
Oh, I think someone should be in there.
And it just takes so much of the oxygen all season. That's all they talk about. Like, you watch game day. I mean, I don't watch game day every week, but I do on certain weeks. And it could just be any type of the season. That's all they're talking about. What, who do this, do that in the playoff? You need to do this, do that. It's just like – it's just exhausting. And I think with college basketball, that's how it gets with the tournament, which obviously – tournament's the best thing college basketball has, but it also, I think, it kind of, I'm trying to think of the word here. It just diminishes the value of their regular season.
It mitigates.
And so
there you go.
So
yeah,
people,
I like that.
You keep pounding it down, and then you talk yourself into thinking, well, people don't care about it, so let's have Mark Teixeira on and interview him during a basketball game. Let's have Ian Book on and interview him during a Virginia Tech Clemson game. Then you're just like, what? Like,
that
what is
made
going on?
No sense at all. Like, we're here, and John Clay wrote about it in the Herald Leader today. The amount of I just want to cater to so and so with random interviews. Like, we're here to watch a game. We're not here to talk. Like, I get if things get boring, you know, it can turn into a baseball game. But this isn't baseball, okay? We don't need to talk about everything. Like, there's action happening. Let's talk about what's happening on the field.
It just shows you that ESPN just doesn't – they don't care about college basketball. I mean, it's volume for them to put on their network, but
– they don't.
I mean, it takes up a lot of airtime.
It takes
but they're
up
probably
a lot of airtime.
Super great numbers with it. I guess when they talk about it, not a lot of people pay attention. So they're trying to add some, I guess, spice to it by putting, you know, a big name on there like – like Mark Teixeira's fan club gonna
Mark
you know Teixeira, tune in
really
for
pulling him in.
Oh, he's being interviewed on the Kentucky North State basketball game on an NFL Sunday afternoon. Like the only people watching that are Kentucky and Georgia Tech fans, really. And then like maybe diehard basketball people.
Yeah. I felt bad that Cincinnati Xavier, like I was happy that game went, like I watched a little bit of it going into the game. That's a great rivalry. It should not have been on an NFL Sunday. That's probably like I would put that as third best rivalry.
It's up there.
Basketball.
I'm trying to think of a football game equivalent. It's kind of like the Egg Bowl if Ole Miss and Mississippi State were a little bit better. Because Xavier and Cincinnati are kind of like top 25 programs, I would say.
Yeah. And if they were in the same town, too.
But
Right. And you only get that in college basketball.
But the vitriol is.
You can have
the vitriol is.
Like Big Five.
On that level, it feels like.
God. The zip them up thing is one of my favorite things that's ever happened. And you know what? It was easy to pick a side when Cronin and Mac were there because like Chris or Mick Cronin's one of the easiest people to hate in the universe. Just everything about him is unlikable. And add to it that he was a Patino guy. Very easy to hate Cincinnati. Now, John Brannon's there who was, a Norse Force guy in KU. So I kind of want to like him.
I think Cincinnati has great basketball jerseys. I've always liked in
the
red and
the
black. I've always loved their basketball jerseys. They used to have the Duncan Bearcat, I think.
Who is this guy? Yeah. Oh, that was really cool. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the guy's name who played. He played when we were in like middle school.
Air Kicks.
He came off the bench and just shot threes. No. Oh man, he was a little guy. It would have been like 03. He was probably sixth man of the year
Cincinnati?
In college basketball. That guy, yeah,
like a guard
for Cincinnati.
Steve Logan.
Yeah. No, he had a weird name too. Sure. It's gonna drive me nuts. And one of my buddies could tell me. I could ask him in 2 seconds. He would know because we used to play with him in that college basketball video game all the time back when those mattered. But nevertheless, oh, man, and Google can't even help me out. I'll find out later, and I'll end up posting it in the body of the podcast just because it's going to annoy the hell out of me. It was like Tip or Hunter or I don't know, Bigsby, Tigsby. All right, I got to stop. All right, Luckett, let's wrap this up. Signing days next week, coaching search heating up. I kind of gave my prediction earlier. where I don't think much is going to happen. Do you think much will happen?
The only thing I'll say is Kel Gundy's a name I've floated out there. If you're going to college guys, I think that guy would make a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. There's obviously the Oklahoma connection. Look at signing days on the 16th. Oklahoma's scheduled to play in the Big 12 championship on the 19th. We would probably, if he's going to be the guy, we probably will learn about it next week. If he's not the guy, then I would think most surely they're going NFL. That's just as where you sit right now. So really this next week, I think, is right. going. If we don't really hear anything, I think all our minds should probably go to probably an NFL guy. Or they're getting down to maybe option 2, 3, 4. If we don't hear anything.
Yeah, and I would just like to point out too that the thing that I like about this podcast, like it, is we can kind of shed light on some things. You know, there's a reason that everybody wrote their everybody wrote about NFL assistants in every outlet that you can find Kentucky sports knowledge on over the last 24 hours. That happened for a reason. So just take that for what you will.
Or they're trying to get you off the scent. Zigging when they get you zagging.
And honestly, dude, I've already faked myself out on the NFL thing twice today. So this will be a fun little experiment for us because this is the first time I've really gone through.
I've read six articles today on Sean McVay's scheme. I could scout a Sean McVay offense right now.
Oh, that's where we're at. It's going to be exciting the month of December, even though football's not happening right now. Things are just getting heated up. It's cold outside, but it's heating up right here on 11 personnel.
Football weather is here and Kentucky's done, unfortunately.
We enjoy Army Navy this weekend. And we'll be back signing day night. It's going to be a little trio, triumvirate. Me, Luckett, Freddie Maggard, telling you everything about the signing class. And who knows, Kentucky might have an offensive coordinator. Until then, we'll see y'all next week on 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett. Go Cats. Go Kroger.